Good morning, Thursday, May 7th. Thursday, May 7th, and you're tuned into 88.5 KRFY at 8 o'clock in the morning for the KRFY morning show. Thank you for tuning in this morning. It is a beautiful day out there. Across from me, I'm your host, Jack. Across from me is Diane, sitting in for Jim this morning. How are you, Diane?
I'm good. Thank you, Jack.
I heard you say that you had to scrape frost off your car this morning.
I did. I wondered if you'd ride your bike or not.
Which I did, and I did not have to scrape any frost off of it.
Good.
It was a beautiful day for a bike ride this morning. According to the official national weather forecast, it's only 46 degrees right now, but sunny all day long and a high near 65. So more of this incredible weather that we've been having, this spring weather that feels more like early summer or
more like June.
Yeah, more like June. And as far as I can see, the national weather forecast calls for more of that until at least Monday. Sunday is going to be beautiful with a high near 72, just in time for Mother's Day.
Huh.
Isn't it Mother's Day?
Yes.
It is Mother's Day this Sunday. And the high is 72 degrees on Sunday, so hopefully people will be out barbecuing, playing lawn games, you know, taking
planting
care
gardens.
Of mom. Yeah, planting gardens. Yeah, it's going to be a great weekend and a great day today to be out and about in North Idaho. Our guests this morning are board members of Food for Our Children, Kurt Hecker and Susan Edwards. And it's a great pleasure to have you two in the studio. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing just great.
That's Kurt.
Yep.
Yeah, really, really good. I agree with you. I love this weather.
Yeah, it is. It is beautiful out. It's amazing. That we've been having such nice weather so early in the year to me,
yeah.
and no rain or anything. I don't know what that means for summer. It might be a little smoky later on, but so far I'm enjoying it. Anyway, but you guys are here to talk about Food for Our Children. What can you tell me about that? What is this organization, Food for Our Children?
Food for Our Children is a nonprofit 501c3 organization that we initiated here several months ago, and it was designed, and its purpose is to address some of the hunger needs that we have within the community. My background, being in banking, I get to see a lot of what's going on economically within the community, and also spend a lot of time with the schools, principals, teachers, and within the community, and we're seeing increased needs and children that are hungry. And we have established programs within the school already that provides subsidized lunches and breakfasts for our children, but there are not programs that are available for some of the weekend times as well as during the summertime. And so we're looking at these needs and looking at the and doing a lot of research across the country to start with, and then within the state of Idaho, and then bringing it down to Bonner County to really identify what those needs are. And so the purpose of putting this organization together was to be able to, one, educate and to provide information to people of what we're learning, and to communicate directly with the schools and with teachers and with their families in the community, and then to just raise public awareness of the issues, and then raise some money so that we can improve the programs. And we've got a plan going forward on how we want to do that, and some goals that we can that we'd love to talk about here today.
Yes, absolutely. My microphone is on. The organization is a pretty new one. As you said, you mentioned the backpack programs that have been going on for a couple of years now, I think. That's not new, but the summertime and weekend thing, that's what you're kind of That's mm-hmm. that's the focus. That's the goal of, yeah. Food for Our Children.
Yeah, actually, the backpack program was initially started, I think, all the way back in 1995, back in Arkansas. And it proved to be a really successful program. And then I don't know exactly the time period, but I remember there were some employees and spouses of employees at Coldwater Creek that brought the initial backpack program here mm-hmm. to Bonner County. And that was successful, and the food bank then took that that program on and continues, but we don't really use the backpacks anymore. So we and it's pretty limited in terms of the amount of children that we're able to provide. So with our organization here, we want to, in essence, you know, pick that backpack program up. We're renaming the program for Food for Our Children, and then distributing, you know, from there. So that's the program has been around for a while, and I'd like to say that when we put the program together, we really thought about how do we do the distribution of the program and how do we make it effective, and we did not want to detract from anything that the food bank is presently doing. We wanted to support and enhance what the food bank is presently doing, and so the food bank, we want to continue to work with them and provide them additional resources via funding to be able to purchase more food. They are the most efficient means of being able to purchase that food, and also then help with the distribution along with other volunteers within the community. So that's what we're presently doing, and want to really add to that.
Mm-hmm. I imagine, yeah, you mentioned the food bank, and shout out to them again. They do great work around here. Mm-hmm. We've had... I imagine the logistics would be tricky. I mean, to get food to children who don't have automobiles, usually can't come down and pick it up themselves or whatever. I don't know. I mean, that's something that you're dealing with right now. You're kind of in the planning stages of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we you know, our plan is we're raising money here now for this summer, and to try to help and supplement for this summer, and we will have locations where we'll be able to provide the program and the bags to the children. But ideally, we're looking, you know, both into the 15-16 school year and beyond on how we can serve both the weekends as well as the summertime meals. And we feel that we can enhance the current program by improving nutritional quality, which will cost a little bit more money to do that over the present program, and be able to deliver on Friday afternoons basically 6 meals for the weekend to the needed students, and then that we would have that distribution and would go out at that time.
Wow, cool. Mm-hmm. So who's involved in this? How did you guys get involved with this new program, Food for Our Children?
Go really? Ahead, Susan. Dennis Pence,
mm-hmm.
who was CEO of Coldwater Creek,
mm-hmm.
Decided to get involved in it, and he came to talk with me. So my job is I'm area supervisor for North Idaho College Head Start, and so I work with children poverty and below. And so Dennis and I talked about the area and where the needs were, and we talked about seeing a hunger, you know, in our area. Now, don't get me wrong, we're not seeing starving children, but definitely hungry. So the backpack program, sending food home from the weekend, is only now in 3 schools. It's in Hope, in Northside, and Kootenai. And we just started Head Start this past month. So we're trying to send home nutritious meals in these. They're just sacks now, not really backpacks. But there's sunflower seeds and 2 cans of fruit. I think the last week was mandarin oranges and then some peaches. And last week we were able to send home some cheese. It was frozen, so, you know, it's all out for the weekend. And also we sent home 2 pieces of fruit with a banana and an apple was last week. So it's being received at my school. We've not had a family leave their sack behind, and we've had families ask for 2. So... I've been with Head Start for 20 years, and definitely, yes, we've had hungry children, but not really like we're seeing now. And
part of the cause is the high cost of food prices. And in 2008, when the federal government had cutbacks, we saw a substantial cutback in food stamps. So that's part of the problem. Most of my parents or families, they're making $8.25 an hour. So if you make $8.25 an hour and you go to the grocery store and milk is, let's say, on sale, $2 a gallon, or apples, or, well, if you want to get the big apples, or maybe a dollar a piece, your money's just not going very far. So they have to juggle things around and finding that they're not able to purchase enough food. And definitely they can utilize a food bank, but you can't go there every day. They're on more of a point system. So what we'd like to see done is more schools. So Dennis has been around to all the school principals, and maybe Kirk has too, to talk with them about, do they want this program? And we've had everyone say yes. All of the elementary schools have said, yes, we want this program. So we send a letter home with the parents explaining the program. It's snacks for the weekend, and then they sign on if they want to. In my program, I haven't had anyone say no. So the program's been going on in Bonner's Ferry for about a year now, and it's the same thing. We've never had a parent leave a bag behind or say that they didn't want it. So from what I'm seeing, there is a definite need for this program. It's just in early childhood, Head Start is children from 3 to 5 years old. 80% of their brain is being developed, and their bones are being developed, and hungry. It can't wait. They have to have nutritious food. So we serve at Head Start very nutritious food. We've been trying to do that for as long as its conception. We serve no processed food, and we're just doing all we can to teach nutrition. And we're seeing lately we've been able to serve really nutritious food, kale, spinach, and have the children eating without second-guessing it. Everything is gone. So,
That's yeah.
So I think Dennis just wanted me on the board because I see it on a daily basis, and he wanted to hear some of my stories and to let me say the need is there.
Mm-hmm.
The need is there. And sometimes even myself, I'm shocked to say, wow, the need is here. Here we are, you know, in the 2015, and we're seeing hungry children. How could this be? But definitely It stems from a lot of circumstances.
And one thing you mentioned there was food prices.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, and nutritious food is, at least in my experience at the grocery store, fruits and vegetables, good nutritious food is a lot of time more expensive than buying, I don't know, the less nutritious frozen.
You're correct. And at the food bank, they go on a point system. So, but if you want bread or donuts, or it's 0 points.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. The nutritious food is the higher price, which is unfortunate. Diane and I just were talking about that a few minutes ago. I look at prices when I go to the grocery store, and is it Safeway? And I came out with a bag that was $63, and I won bag. And I thought, oh my gosh, what did I buy here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it just, it adds up.
Yes, it does. Yeah. We're in conversation with board members of Food for Our Children. If there are listeners out there who want to help you out with this, is there a website? How can they get in touch with you?
Yes, we do have a website, and the website is foodforourchildren.org. It's all letters, foodforourchildren.org. Mm-hmm. And on that site, we've got a homepage listed there that explains who we are and what we're doing and how we've organized and how we plan to resolve the childhood hunger issues within Bonner County. And with on that site, we also show our plan and our the goals that we have and how we're going to do that. So I really encourage everybody to visit our website. Further, we have a way to contact us, and we have a pledge card that is on the site, and you can go to that site and provide us your email information and a pledge to be able to help us. And we will keep you informed, and then the whole public informed of how we're doing and how we're spending the money. And I do want to hit on just a real important point that's important to the board and how we set this up. We've set this up so that virtually almost all of the money is going to go directly to food and to the kids. And we don't have administrative or paid staffing. This is purely to be able to use all the dollars that we get and get it directly to our kids.
Great.
A totally volunteer organization.
Yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dive into the controversy a little bit. What do you say to somebody who would think that this is programs like this, food stamps, and what you guys are trying to do are sort of provide a perverse incentive to people who are receiving assistance and would lose it if they were making more money? So maybe they're disinclined to get a job or what have you.
Mm-hmm. No, there are those questions that are out there, and I totally understand some of the issues that are there. But for me, at the end of the day, to tell a 7-year-old boy or girl to go out and get a job is just not possible, and I think that's just being unrealistic. Some of the cases that we have, and with many of some of the. In the court system, or in people and parents that are having extreme problems, the parents sometimes are barely there or even not there, and so I just don't know how you avoid some of the controversy that is there. But for me, it's just doing the right thing, and when we see this, we can identify it. There's just no reason for children to go hungry like that.
So. You would think that's not a controversial stand to take.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yes.
Feeding hungry children seems not very political to me.
But, the other programs, whatnot, you could take political stances as you will, but from my standpoint, we're talking kids here, and so to me, that's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. The organization is called Food for Our Children. You can go to foodforourchildren.org, and that's all spelled out. I just brought it up myself here. Lovely website you guys have. All the information is right there in front of you with some good links and contact at the top. You're listening to the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show, and I think we'll take a short musical break. We'll be back with a little more with Kurt Hecker and Susan Edwards from Food for Our Children. And later on in the hour, Susan Drumheller is coming in from the Idaho Conservation League. They've got some events coming up as well. But right now, it was in 1972, on this date, in 1972, so 43 years ago today, if I'm not mistaken, 43? Yeah, 43. 43
don't,
years ago
don't
today.
Ask me.
Yeah. 43 years ago today, it would be your 43rd birthday if you were born on this day in 1972, which is when the Rolling Stones released their what some people consider their masterpiece. I know I might be in that club. If Jim Healy were here, I'm sure he would have a thing or two to say about that. But the LP that they released, the double LP that they released, was called Exile on Main Street. It is a great album, and this is one of the two singles that they released off of it. This is called Happy. It's a Keith Richards solo composition, actually, that he was very pleased with himself for being able to write a hit song without Mick Jagger involved at all, from what I understand.
Hmm.
The Rolling Stones celebrating 43 years of Exile on Main Street today. We'll be back with more from the KRFY Morning Show. The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing KRFY.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource. The Rolling Stones, the song is called Happy, the album Exile on Main Street, and that was released 43 years ago today. Time does fly. You're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. Our guests this morning are Susan Edwards and Kurt Hecker from Food for Our Children, sort of a new organization in town designed, as the name implies, to kind of tackle the issue of hunger among children in Bonner County and the area. Across from me is Diane Newcomer. And how are you, Diane? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm excellent. And it is a new organization for an old problem. Because when we first opened the library, the remodeled library in Clark Fork in 2000, we had hungry kids coming in every afternoon. And we did figure out ways to feed them and are still feeding some of them, but not in an organized endeavor as this is. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to say is that kids that are hungry are not as aware of their surroundings. And we're coming on to bike riding on the roads and the lake. And we really want those kids to be aware and be at their most functional.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't do that if their tummy is rumbling at them.
Right. It doesn't end when school's out. It's not like you don't need your brain anymore.
I did wonder what's your sustainability? How can we contribute and how can we continue? How can you continue this program?
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. We've had a lot of discussion about sustainability because we don't want to just start this up, have it be something that lasts for a year and then it can't continue on. So we are starting immediately, as Susan had just mentioned. But the current backpack, or I won't refer to it as a backpack program, or the food to go program that is running at a couple of elementary schools at this point in time. At each bag that we're giving out is $4 and $4 in cost. And Susan, I think, could speak to the cost that of what we would have to pay for that if we were to go to the store and not use the food bank to be able to purchase that food. But under our charter, we would like to increase that that cost per bag to $6 and significantly be able to improve the nutritional value of the meal that we have going out. But right now, the cost of the program, the current program that the food bank has been servicing, is running, is serving about 173 kids, within, and that runs about 26,000. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
$26,000 a year. And if we increase that just with those couple of schools to $6 a bag, is going to increase the price tag up to just a little under $40,000 a year.
Now, Kurt, for that $4 a bag that it's costing you, what if you were going to the store, what would that cost you?
Susan, I'm going to let you.
The retail price, Diane, would be around $15. We're getting it from Second Harvest, and we're getting it at wholesale prices. And $15 for snacks for the weekend for your child is pretty much if you're trying to stretch your budget already.
You bet it is.
Yeah. So, that is not – and you guys get it for $4.
That's
nice markdown that you get there. That's good. Very cool. And you said Second Harvest helps you out with that. How is there any other reason that you are able to get it at such a discount?
I don't think so, Jack. Yeah. They just can get food in really big bulk, so I think that's why. But
cool,
yeah.
So I'll let Kurt finish out with the sustainability because this is something that we really want to work towards, and we understand that the food that has to be ordered, it has to be ordered maybe several months in advance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Kirk and I are kind of dealing with that, trying to raise money as quickly as we can before summer and before September starts.
Mm-hmm.
So longer term, if we, in after raising the money and being able to serve all of the elementary schools, as well as the high school and the alternative school and Head Start, that would come to 565 bags, roughly, that we would be needing to support. And that's a little over $175,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we are, you know, shooting to raise a couple $100,000 on an annual basis and to continue that going. We are soliciting from the community, and that's coming in a variety of forms. We have our pledge sheet has got a membership level at $25 a year, a supporting member at $100 a year, sustaining member at $250 a year, small businesses from $100 to $250 a year, large businesses $1,000 a year, and then we have a president's circle for those that are giving greater amounts. But beyond that, we have also are working with the Idaho Community Foundation and the Inland Northwest Foundation, and we are applying for grants with them and have been in conversations with them. And there are several other grant opportunities to be able to support this program long term. So I think a combination of the grants as well as the community continuing to support this, I believe it's very sustainable to move forward.
Yeah, you said. That currently there's about, Susan, maybe you can speak to this too. There's only three elementary, this is not a system-wide program here in Bonner County.
Correct.
It's only three schools right now.
Correct.
And to expand it would be, you'd be talking about, if in my head I hopefully did the math correctly, you're at least tripling the number of bags that are going out.
You're right.
Would be the goal.
Yes.
That's impressive.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And what, go ahead.
I guess, Jack, I want to speak to, you know, there are a lot of organizations that are just trying to help the hungry in general. There are soup kitchens every day of the week. There's Monday, the Assembly of God and Hoodow, and Tuesday, Seventh-day Adventist, and Wednesday, Gardenia Center, Thursday, Methodist Church, Friday, Catholic Church. So we're all kind of, we're just trying to group together to help the hungry. There's quite the need. So I've talked to some of the people who run the soup kitchens, and they say every Friday is like it used to be on Thanksgiving. They're seeing 80 to 90 families, which they used to do Thanksgiving. So I think all of us in Sandpoint, which is a very loving, giving community, if they know the need, they'll help us. It's getting an awareness out there, Jack, to let people know what's going on, what we're seeing. I think hunger is all kind of a hidden thing often. You don't realize someone's hungry.
That's, yeah.
Right. I've talked to a couple of the teachers in the school district, and they feel that some of their behavioral problems are due to hunger.
I believe it.
And definitely what Diane says, there's kind of a lethargic that comes with it when you're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to think about, hard to totally focus on anything else if that's in the back of your mind at any time. Yeah. And it does make you kind of, I don't know, loopy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A little sluggish. We're talking with Food for Our Children. We are running a little short on time, but it does sound like you guys have a plan for making this a sustainable and ongoing concern, and that's good. That's great. And our community listeners can help by going to the website, which is, again,
foodforourchildren.org.
Foodforourchildren.org. What do you get for that extra $2 that you'll be putting into each bag? Do you know it?
I do. We've been looking at kind of a breakfast fruit bar. I want to say granola bar, but that's not it. It's it would be like a whole wheat fig bar or something nutritional. That would be one of the things we'd like to include.
Mm-hmm.
And then also be able to continue some fresh fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we talked about, those are the expensive parts.
Yes, they are. That fresh fruit.
Right.
Thank you guys both for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure, Jack and Diane.
Yeah. Did we forget to mention anything? Did we neglect anything? any last point that we should make before I cut to music?
No, I think we were able to get the message out. And if there's more information beyond the website, please feel free to get in contact with us or just sign up on the website and ask for the additional information. And we will make sure we have people watching that to make sure that we can get that information to you, as well as any additional information and statistics on hunger within the county as well.
And Jack, let's see if we can get them back after school starts and see how the program went through the summer.
Right. A little status update would be good. Yeah.
We'd love to do that.
Thank you
guys both for coming in and what you're doing out there. Coming up next, in 1972, on this date, when the Rolling Stones were releasing their album Exile on Main Street, Reginald Dwight was just down the street getting his name changed to Elton Hercules John. It was in 1972 on this date that he officially changed his name to Elton John. Here's a short little number from him, and you are listening to the KRFY Morning Show. We'll be right back with, hopefully, with Susan Drumheller. I think I saw her waiting in the wings out there. Otherwise, it's me and Diane with you for the rest of the morning. Thanks for listening. Here's Elton John. The KRFY Morning Show is broadcast every Tuesday and Thursday, live at 8 a.m. Tune in to 88.5 or stream us live from our website at 8 o'clock to hear the complete and unedited program, including musical selections. Due to our licensing, we are unable to include full songs in our downloadable podcasts. We now return to the KRFY Morning Show. You are listening to the KRFY Morning Show. That was This Song Has No Title by a man who adopted his own official title on this date in 1972. That was Elton John, changing his name from Reginald Dwight to Elton Hercules John. Did you know that was his middle name? Yeah, it is. Our guest right now, first of all, thank you to Kurt and Susan from Food for Our Children for stopping by, telling us about that wonderful new organization that's here in our community. Now, just down the desk from us is friend of the program, and are you what is your official title at the Idaho Conservation League?
I'm a North Idaho associate.
Okay. The North Idaho associate, the North Idaho associate from the Idaho Conservation League, Susan Drumheller. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
What's going on down there at the Idaho Conservation League? There's a couple of things coming up very soon. What's coming? What's first? What's on deck?
Well, first, I just need to remind everybody that today is Idaho Gives, It's a great opportunity to contribute to your local nonprofit or other nonprofits in Idaho that you care about. So we're part of that as well. And we're going to have an event tonight at the Poor Authority. A bunch of different groups that are part of Idaho Gives are going to be celebrating the day, and you can make a donation there too.
Cool.
Participating organizations.
We had a show mostly to a large extent about Idaho Gives. We had a couple of people come down. You can go to our website, krfy.org, if you want to listen for all the details about Idaho Gives.
Okay.
But yeah, just a little self boost.
I just had to remind everybody about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you did.
Yeah. And coming up Monday, we're co-hosting a screening of The Coal Road to China with Lake Pondere Waterkeeper. And Shannon Williamson from Waterkeeper was going to be here, but she wasn't able to make it. And so I'll just share a little bit of information about that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. So The Coal Road to China is just about a half hour documentary. It was put together by a couple of folks in Montana. Jan and Harold Holm, and they are with a group called Montana Elders for a Livable Tomorrow. And Waterkeeper and ICL, we're working with a number of groups around the region on the issue of coal and oil transport by rail. And one of the cool things about working on this project is there are so many other groups in the region that are working on it. And so we come across these other folks who are really passionate about the issue. And Jan and Harold are a couple of those folks, and they put together a nice half-hour film that gives a great overview of coal exports to Asia and the impacts it would have here and around the world if Pacific Coast terminals are built on the West Coast, and also if the Tongue River Railroad in Montana is constructed. And so really the purpose of Monday's screening is to give everybody background about the Tongue River Railroad. It is a 42-mile long rail line that would be built in eastern Montana to serve a new mine, which would be the largest mine in Montana. It's the largest proposed mine in the country right now, coal strip mine. And that coal could potentially all be shipped through Sandpoint to the West Coast. And so there's a public comment period right now before federal regulators, and so we'll be collecting comments mm-hmm. on that as well at the meeting.
You will? Collecting comments on Monday during the screening.
Yeah. So okay. After the screening, we'll have a question and answer period, and then we'll take comments. We'll make it easy for people to provide comments to the Federal Surface Transportation Board, which is going to decide whether or not to approve this new rail line.
So this is currently where, this is an issue that a lot of people around here have been following for what's been in the works for, it seems like years now, a couple of years maybe.
Yeah.
The currently where it stands is it's still just proposed. There is no mine. There's no trains running through, and there is no port on the West Coast, but that could all change.
Well, we do have a port on the West Coast, and we do have trains coming through, and they are coming from the Powder River Basin, which is an area of Montana and Wyoming where a lot of this coal is coming from. There's a coal export terminal in British Columbia, and so you see coal trains coming through on a daily basis here. We get probably two or three coal trains per day coming through full, and they're headed to British Columbia. If those other export terminals are built in Bellingham and Vancouver, we could see that increase to about 40 trains a day. Well, actually, that'd be full and empty. Mm-hmm. 40 to 50.
Wow.
I mean, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
And it also depends on how big the trains are.
Mm-hmm.
So they're coming through mostly right now through Hope and Clark Fork along the Montana Rail Link line and then going on to the main BNSF line to Spokane.
Yeah. And then up to BC.
Yeah.
Where's where's the port that's proposed?
There are two ports proposed. One's in Vancouver, Washington, and one is in Bellingham, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
There's also one in Oregon, but that one did not get a pretty important permit it needed from the Department of Lands in Oregon, so it's kind of on hold. It could come back.
But if those two, if nobody, I don't know, if the public comments don't derail this, then that's two ports and a new rail line as well.
And a new mine.
Yeah.
And possibly other mines in that area. So, we're part of a larger coalition, and we're trying to generate a lot of comments on this. And this is just sort of the start of what's going to be like a series of public comment opportunities throughout the summer and the fall and into next year. In addition to this, we're expecting some public comment opportunities on oil terminals on the West Coast as well. Already we're seeing a lot of Bakken crude oil trains coming through, and those are particularly dangerous, of course. We just had another derailment and explosion yesterday in North Dakota. So it's a real issue. There's been five so far this year around North America. So we're really concerned about that. And, you know, having so many trains coming through, we're looking at the potential for doubling our rail traffic through Sandpoint. So we're working on all of these together. They're all related.
I have never felt that Sandpoint was was short on rail traffic to begin with. So that's, this would be quite a change.
And trains are great. I mean, generally, I mean, they're very efficient. It's a great way to haul goods and people. Mm-hmm. It's the dramatic increase of these dangerous trains and carrying, harmful materials that concerns us, and the fact that the companies that are proposing these things, they don't seem to have to pay any of the impacts. I mean, we're going to deal with all the impacts here. We get none of the benefits. Mm. We're just right in the middle of where the coal and the oil is and where the terminals are.
Yeah. Well, we could talk about that all day, I'm sure, but is there anything else coming up that we should be sure to mention before I ask you any more questions about that? Do you have any other events coming up that I should be talking about?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
for Idaho Conservation League?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. We've got a fun run that we're doing with the Friends of the Pondere Bay Trail on June 7th. And people can register for that now. They can go to pobtrail.org to sign up. And it's a 5K and a 10K. And it will, the 5K is on the Pondere Bay Trail along the lakeshore. And then the 10K takes you also up the Sand Creek, Creekside Trail and back. So, should be really fun. And this is the third year that we've done it. And it is a benefit for the Pondere Bay Trail.
Right on. That's what I was, We are, I think there's actually going to be a little KRFY desk there and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is going to be a fun event.
I didn't give the details on the Coal Road to China event, though.
No, let's get back to that. the Coal Road to China is a half hour movie produced in Montana. Cool. And it's go ahead. When's it screening and where?
It's going to be Monday at 5:30 at Sandpoint Community Hall. It's free. Doors open at 5. And we should be wrapping up the event, around 7 o'clock. We will have refreshments available for people.
And not to mention that public comment thing, which is just going to be...
Yeah, that's kind of... We're really just hoping to get people up to speed on what's going on and hope that they'll make some public comments because, we want to generate a lot of comments.
Yes. What is... So we've got concerns about the coal trains coming through and the oil as well coming from North Dakota, you said. Is that also going to expand in the oil? Yeah, the oil.
There's a number of different oil terminals and storage facilities that are planned for the West Coast that would also facilitate more oil trains coming through. Part of it depends on the market, how much is going to come through. But if all those terminals are built, I think the expectation is we could see 22 or more oil trains per day. Mm-hmm. Right now, per week, the latest number is like 8 to 12 oil trains. Also, with the concerns about the volatility of Bakken crude and how flammable and dangerous it is, there's been an effort to try to make the existing train traffic more safe. Mm-hmm. And so the federal government came out with some new regulations on the oil tanker cars just Friday, I think, or just Friday. And we're kind of disappointed with those. They're not as stringent as they could be. Mm-hmm. Senator Cantwell in Washington State has come up with a legislation that would strengthen those. And so, we're hopeful that'll get some traction.
Cool. The legislation the terminology was the new regulations. The new regulations. They just came out on Friday. When will they go into effect? Do you know?
I'm not sure exactly.
But not yet. They're just now they're out there. I didn't hear about this train in there was a recent crash in North Dakota, you said
yesterday. Mm-hmm. Nobody was injured. Uh-huh. But there was an explosion and fire, and a few weeks ago a report came out also from the federal government that predicts 10 train derailments per year involving Bakken crude or ethanol, you know, highly flammable materials. And they predict a certain number of deaths and, you know, costs to clean things up. A lot in other places, you know, these derailments have polluted rivers in addition to killing people. So it's a real issue. People are really concerned about it. And we're going to be working hard in the next several months to, you know, continue to raise awareness about it and put pressure on folks to do something to make these things more safe.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I've got a fun question. What's the worst case scenario? What could happen if either a coal or oil train derailed around here? What could we be looking at? And especially from an environmental standpoint, not just a...
Well, it's interesting you ask that because right now, I really have to hand it to Bob Howard, you know, the emergency director. What do we...
Emergency services.
Well, I think he's a disaster... I can't remember his actual title.
Either.
Anyway, he's in charge of taking care of us when everything goes wrong. You know, if there's a disaster or other emergency, he coordinates those emergency responses. Not for minor things, but for major things like derailments and that sort of thing. And he and the State Department of Homeland Security and DEQ and the EPA and all the emergency services providers right now, they are working on a plan to do a tabletop exercise as well as a live exercise where they would practice if there were an oil train derailment and fire just off the Long Bridge near City Beach, you know, during the summer. They would practice both how does their geographic response plan work and how do they work as a team to respond to this? How do they communicate? How do they work with the public? How do they, you know, everything. They're going to practice all of this, and it's going to be really important. And I'm really glad that they're doing this, and we should learn a lot about it, and they should learn a lot about it. So, so that's great. They're taking it seriously.
That is great. The accidents in the past, I mean, if a train were to crash, there would be long-term effects. It wouldn't just be the crash, right?
Well, potentially in Lac Mégantic, in, Quebec, they had, I guess it's been almost 2 years now. There was a derailment. There was a runaway train that exploded in the middle of town near downtown, and their downtown is destroyed. They cannot reoccupy the downtown. It's so contaminated, and 47 people died. Mm-hmm. It really destroyed their town, and it polluted their river. I mean, it's a town roughly the size of Sandpoint. It's a resort community. It's on... a
Not
lake.
Anymore.
It's yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a very similar kind of situation to Sandpoint. So that strikes home.
Yes,
Mégantic. L-A-C.
Okay.
That may mean lake, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's Mégantic.
Lac Mégantic. I'm gonna have to look into that one. Sounds like a fun horror story for Halloween night or something. So we've talked about coal trains and oil trains. Is there one more time? The event coming up is when and where?
Monday, excuse me. And doors open at 5 o'clock at Sandpoint Community Hall, right down here at the end of First Avenue. And the film will roll at 5:30. It's about a half hour, and we'll follow that up with a little Q&A, and then we'll be collecting comments on the Tongue River Railroad. And we're going to be serving some light refreshments.
Nice. The directors of the film will be there as well, right?
Yes.
Answer some questions about the film.
Good. And so will I and Shannon from Waterkeeper.
Cool. Knowledgeable folks. Yeah. So this is probably the most to my mind, the most like contentious issue right now in our area. This is the big political debate that's going on, at least as it affects our area. I don't know.
I think everybody can get behind the safety issues. I mean, if we're talking about, I mean, I think everybody believes that we need to have, safe crossings, that the local taxpayers and, taxpayers in general shouldn't have to shoulder the financial burden of making this transport safe through our community. The city of Sandpoint has some real concerns about, Boyer Avenue and the need for, separated grade crossing, either an underpass or an overpass. Mm-hmm. There's no way to pay for it. And the railroads have no obligation to help pay for those things. Up to 5% at the most if they close down an at-grade crossing and replace it with an overpass or an underpass, the railroads only have to pay up to 5%.
Hmm.
And those are millions of dollars.
Yeah. That would be... Wow. Yeah, that is interesting. And that does seem like a... That's not contentious at all, at least around here. I think everybody agree that that's...
Yeah, and, like I said, I mean, trains, we like trains. Trains are efficient. I don't even mind the whistle. Some people think the noise pollution is a real issue for some people, too. That's another thing that, the railroads won't pay for silent crossings, which requires, extra gates and all kinds of things to make them safe so that people won't run through them. But again, I mean, all these costs of making these things compatible with our community fall on the taxpayers and not the companies that are going to be reaping the benefits of this, expanded coal and oil business.
Hmm. Right. How could we possibly not like that?
Yeah.
I mean, ouch, in my pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the common denominator. And, of course, there's other concerns, too. I mean, oil spills are a visceral concern. Mm-hmm. Coal dust does come off of these coal trains. That has numerous impacts, whether it's you live next to the tracks and this stuff builds up on your windowsills and it mixes in the air and you breathe it. That stuff's toxic. Or whether it's getting into the ballast of the tracks and it creates maintenance problems for the railroads, which means the potential for more derailments. And then, we don't want Bakken oil or some other nasty substance getting into our waterway. So, it's right. All related.
Yeah. So I asked about the worst case scenario if something went absolutely wrong, but even if everything goes right, and there's never a disaster, there's still going to be a great impact.
There's still impacts. Yeah.
The film is called Coal Road to China. It's on May 11th at Sandpoint Community Hall, which is right on South First Street, just downtown. Light refreshments will be served. Susan Drumheller and Shannon Williamson and filmmakers of the film will be on hand to answer questions. Take public comments. That's great.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. Not Shannon, Susan, thanks for coming in. You are listening to the KRFY Morning Show, and we are so close to out of time. Diane, you have a calendar of events in front of you, if I'm not mistaken.
I do.
Is there anything else that we should be sure to mention before we run out of time this morning? Go ahead.
There's a plant sale at the museum Saturday. It's our annual fundraiser.
Uh-huh.
And we will have over 38 varieties of tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't know there were 38 varieties of tomatoes.
No, I didn't.
And we open at 9 o'clock and we'll go until about 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the parking lot there by the Lion's Den on Ella Street by the museum.
Cool. I almost stopped by there last Saturday, but then I didn't. I had, speaking of trains, I had a need for a train and I thought you guys might help me out, but I ran out of time. I'll talk to you about that after the show.
Yeah.
What else is going on this weekend? Anything that's a good one. The plant sale is going to be a good one.
Well, Idaho Gives, mm-hmm. and she talked about that.
Right. Idaho Gives going on today. Susan, do you have anything else you want to throw in about Idaho Gives?
Just come have a beer down at Port Authority later and make a donation.
Done. Okay.
Or two. Yeah. Or three.
Okay. Idaho Gives going on, and it's just a 24-hour deal, right? Going on right now.
Yeah, and you can go online, and it should be, it's like all over Facebook and and various organizations, you know, have links to it.
Well, we are just about out of time. You're listening to the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. Thanks for listening this morning. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long right here on 88.5 KRFY, Sandpoint Community Radio, Panhandle Community Radio, broadcasting out of Ponderay with studios right here in downtown Sandpoint. Have a good morning, everybody. Here's Bird Note.